All right, welcome everybody. Tonight we are studying Sefer Shmuel, Perek 16, Perek Tezayin, and the title of tonight's shiur is Cinder Fella, the Unlikely Birth and Rise of David HaMelech, David Melech Yisrael. And tonight's shiur is sponsored by Ben and Karen Dax in memory of Ben's beloved mother, Devorah Leah Bas Avram Yitzchak, Theodora Dax, Alei Shalom, on the occasion of her yahrzeit. So some of you may be aware of or may remember the movie Cinder Fella with Jerry Lewis, which was a take on Cinderella. And I think that Perek 16, if it's not too blasphemous for me to say it, might be the original Cinder Fella. So let me explain what I mean by starting at the beginning of the perek. So I'm going to share my screen with you. If you have a Navi at hand, it's best to read out of the Navi, but if not, I'm going to share my screen. Okay. And as always, I can't really see everybody when I'm on share screen. So if you have something that you want to say, just find an appropriate place to chime in. All right, let's go here. Okay. All right, we're actually going to start our discussion tonight at the end of last week's parak of Parak Tesvav, and here we'll begin right here, Pasuk Lamedalad. Vayelech Shmuel Haramasa. Shmuel goes to Ramah. V'Sha'ul ala el beis Givat Sha'ul, and Sha'ul goes to Givat Sha'ul. They parted ways. You know, Sha'ul wanted Shmuel to come with him, and to the extent that he could come, he came, but they parted ways. And lo yasaf Shmuel lirosa Sha'ul ad yom moso. That was the very last time that Shmuel ever laid his eyes on Sha'ul till his death. Ki hisabel Shmuel el Shaul, because Shmuel was in a constant state of mourning over Shaul. That is to say, that Shaul's give me one second. I apologize. Somebody has just texted me that they're having trouble getting in, so I'm going to try to send them the link. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay, sorry about that. Hopefully that individual will be able to get on now. V'lo yasaf Shmuel lirosas Sha'ul ad yom moso. And Shmuel never laid his eyes upon Sha'ul until the day of his death. Ki hisabel Shmuel Sha'ul, that Shmuel was so distraught over the fact that Sha'ul lost his monarchy, that Sha'ul made poor decisions, that Sha'ul acted in a way that was unbecoming and unbefitting of his state, of his stature and his station, and as a consequence, it was a terrible, terrible loss for Shmuel, who had originally anointed him. Hashem nicham, and God had regretted ki himlicha Shaul al Yisrael, that he had made Shaul king of Israel. Okay, so that's the end of last week's parak, and now parak Tet Zayin begins. Vayomer Hashem el Shmuel, God calls out to Shmuel. Ad masay ata misabel al Shaul. How long are you going to continue mourning over Shaul? The anima astiv, I have despised him. That, and I think that means, I don't think it means on a personal level. I think it means that Hashem no longer considers him appropriate to be the king of Israel, and so therefore anima astiv means more like I have rejected him than I despise him. Anima astiv mimloch al Yisrael, that I've rejected him from ruling over Israel. Malei karnecha, and therefore fill up your jug, your pitcher of oil. The lech eshlachecha al Yishai beis halachmi, go to Yishai in Beis Lechem, ki ra'isi bevanav li malach, because I found that in that family there is a one who will be king. Okay, Bayomer Shmuel echelech. Now, when Hashem says jump, you say how high, and Shaul and Shmuel responds instead of how high, he says echelech v'shama Shaul v'haragani. How will I go? And Shmuel is going to hear this, and he's going to kill me. This is somewhat reminiscent of Moshe Rabbeinu when Hashem tells Moshe to go and speak to Paro, that Moshe Rabbeinu demurs, and here Shmuel is doing the same thing. We had a shiur a few weeks ago doing a lot of comparisons between Shmuel and Moshe Rabbeinu, and this is yet another connection between Shmuel and Moshe. But it is an interesting question: how exactly, you know, if Hashem says go, what is Shaul afraid of? How can he really be afraid that Shaul is going to kill him? Hashem said go. So there are only two possibilities here. Either Hashem said go, and his intent is for Shaul to be killed, in which case, why is Shaul arguing? Or, more likely, Hashem told Shmuel to go, and he'll be protected. But benkach ubenkach, this is the charge that Shmuel is made to do. And he's concerned that somehow his life is in danger. So some of the Mefarshim point out that the essential halachic problem, if you will, is shluchei mitzvah eina nizokin, that a person who is on their way to do a mitzvah has special protection, and therefore Shmuel should not have had any concerns whatsoever. The response to that is, it is true that shluchei mitzvah eina nizokin, that somebody who's on their way to do a mitzvah has added protection, but that doesn't mean if you're on your way to give tzedakah, you can walk through a 7-lane highway without regard to the traffic because somehow you're going to be protected. It's an idea called shchiya chazeka, which means that if this is something which is a commonly dangerous activity, then your engaging in a mitzvah is not going to protect you from common danger. So a person can't say, oh, I'm going to give a nickel to tzedakah and then cross a 10-lane highway with their eyes blindfolded and assume that they're going to make it across. No, it doesn't work that way. And here, Shmuel was saying, basically declaring that, this is a dangerous situation. And shluchei mitzvah eina nizokin. That only applies that if it's not something which is naturally dangerous. But this is naturally dangerous. Now, if Hashem is going to protect him in a situation where he's not naturally protected on his own, that means that Shmuel is now dipping into his credit card, to his trust fund that he's built up, or his retirement fund. Meaning that when a person through the course of his life, if they are financially able and responsible, then they try to put together money for retirement, if they're able to and responsible, right? And the same works in the spiritual realm. A person who is able, which is hopefully everyone, and responsible, which is hopefully everyone, you want to do as many mitzvos and masim tovim to build up your retirement fund in Olam Haba. So if Shmuel is going now to cash in on that because Hashem is going to protect him ba'olam hazeh from this naturally dangerous situation, that means that Shmuel is going to be dipping in to his schar olam haba. And so this is how some mefarshim explain Shmuel's apparent brazen challenge to Hashem. He wasn't saying, Hashem, I don't trust you. He was actually saying the opposite. Saying, Hashem, I trust you implicitly. But because I trust you implicitly, to protect me, and this is going over and above and beyond the call of duty, I'm concerned that I'm going to lose schar olam haba. Okay, that's how some of Farshim understand it. Vayomer Hashem, and Hashem responds to him, don't worry.
Rabbi, yeah. Actually asked him, eich elech. It didn't say im elech or something like that. Eich, so I have to get some kind of a way to do it that he should not kill me.
Right. So there are two ways, I guess, to read this pasuk. One is that it's a rhetorical question to Hashem. How could I go And the other is that it is an informational question. He's saying, Eichelech, Hashem, you know, give me the instructions of how I can go, you know, given Vishama Shal Vaharagani. Vayomer Hashem, and Hashem says, don't worry, Eglas Bakar Tikach Biyadecha, you'll take a calf in your hand, via Marta, and you will say, Lizboach Hashem Basi. When you get to Beis Lechem, you'll say you're coming to give a karban to Hashem. The karasa li yishai bazavach, and you will collect the prominent elders of the city, which includes Yishai. Vanochi odiacha es asher taseh, and I'll tell you what to do at that point. Umashachta li es asher amar lecha, and you will anoint for me the person that I tell you to do. Bayas Shmuel, and by the way, the Mefarshim say that from here we see that for Shalom, for the purposes of preserving peace, one can change the truth a little bit. You can fib a little white lie. So Hashem gave him what? So Hashem gave him the opportunity here. Vayas Shmuel, and Shmuel did es asher diber Hashem vayavo beis lachem, and he comes to beis lachem. Vayechridu ziknei er likrosu vayomer shalom boecha, and the elders of the city come out and they greet him, and they are terrified. They say vayechridu, and they say shalom boecha, hello, welcome. What are you doing here? And the Mefarshim say they were concerned that he came with his egel, that maybe he was going to perform the ritual of Egla Arufa, when there is a dead body, a corpse found between two cities, and you don't know which city the person was murdered, the murderer came from. So you go to the closest city, and there's a ritual done with the elders of the city. And so that's what's going on over here. Vayechredu ziknei ha'ir likraso. The elders of the city came out, and they were trembling. They were tittering. Vayom shalom boach. And he says, "Don't worry. Shalom luzboach l'Hashem basi. Hello, greetings. I came to bring a karban to Hashem. Hiskadshu v'asamiti bazavach. Vayikadesh es Yishai v'ezbana. Vayikra lahem lazavach." And he instructed them to prepare and to purify themselves. And he called them together. And it was, hold on one second. I skipped an important pasuk. I'm sorry. Hold on a second. We have to go back. I apologize. Put a pause where we are. We have to go back to the previous perek, and I started a little bit too late. So I have to read one pasuk for you, two psukim, pasuk 28 and 29. I apologize for the non sequitur here, but it's important that I do it in order for the next part of the shir to come into full focus. Vayomer elav Shmuel. Shmuel says to Vayomer elav Shmuel, and Shmuel says to Shaul, "Kara Hashem es mamluchus Yisrael me'alecha. Hashem has ripped away the monarchy, the kingship from you. Unisana l'reacha hatov mimecha, and he has given it to somebody better than you. V'gam, and furthermore, Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker v'lo yinachem ki lo adam hu lihinachem." The eternal one, meaning Hashem, Netzach Yisrael, lo yishaker, does not lie, does not tell, v'lo yinachem, and does not regret, ki lo adam hu lihinachem, because he's not like a person who experiences regret. Vayomer, and then Shaul says, I sinned, and this, and that, and the whole thing. But at the end of the day, and this is the pasuk that I read for you at the end, they part their ways, v'Hashem nicham, and God regretted that he had chosen Shaul. So, the question that I should have posed at the beginning of this year, but I somehow neglected to start the psukim in the right place. All right, but the question is, how does the Shmuel say to Shaul, Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker v'lo yinachem? God does not lie and he does not regret, because he's not like a person who regrets. What do you mean? What does this pasuk mean? Hashem said a few psukim earlier when he speaks to Shmuel, he says, Nichamtim, I regret that I appointed Shaul as king. And then at the end of our perek here, right at the end, Vahashem Nicham Kim Lichet whoops. Hashem Nicham Kim Lichet Shaul Al Yisrael. Hashem regretted that he had originally made Shaul king of Israel. So what does Shmuel mean to say God does not regret? And he certainly doesn't regret like human beings regret. God is beyond that. God is above that. So there are three answers that I would like to share. The first is that Nichamtim means, actually there's one answer. There are three there are three interpretations of Nechama. And with each of these interpretations, we can see how we could possibly answer our question. So the first interpretation of Nechama means God regrets. Our question is only strengthened by that. Hashem regrets. Okay? How can you say that Hashem doesn't regret? Hashem regretted. Hashem regretted before. Hashem regrets in the middle. Hashem regretted at the end of this parak. How do you say that? But there's another meaning to the word nichamtim, and that means consoled. And I heard a beautiful idea in explaining this nechama, that Hashem, when Hashem regretted in a sense, but Hashem also moved on. He was already consoled, because Hashem knew that there's a positive outcome going to come out of here. Hashem already has David HaMelech set in his sights. So he's not concerned. He's regretting and he's consoled at the same time. And similar to when Hashem destroys the world. How do you say Hashem doesn't regret? It's the first parsha of the entire Torah. Hashem regret, well, not the first parsha, but the end of the first parsha and the beginning of the second parsha. Hashem regretted that he created humanity. Ki nichamtim ki asher asisim. God regretted that he created humanity. How do you say that God doesn't create? No. What it means is in that moment of regret, Hashem is already consoled because he knows that Noah is going to be saved and humanity will restart itself and there will be a future. And this is what it means that the low he's not like a person who regrets. It means not that he's not like a person who regrets. Hashem, to whatever extent God can regret, he knows past, present, and future, but Dibra Torah B'lashon B'nei Adam, using human terminology and language. So Hashem, changed his mind, as it were. Hashem, quote-unquote, regretted. So Hashem can, as it were, regret. But kilo adam hulinachem, he's not like human beings who regret, because when human beings regret, very often they get stuck, like Shaul, like Shmuel. Shmuel was stuck in this avelos. He didn't cast his eyes upon Shaul the rest of his life, not the rest of his life. He was stuck in that moment, and he couldn't let it go. Now, I am not going to judge anyone who is plagued by grief. My father, Olav HaShalom, passed away 2 years ago and change. And very often, just in the middle of the day, I think about him. And I think, and sometimes I'm sad about it. So, people are, I think it's part of the human condition, but this is different than Hashem. Hashem is at once, regretful, as it were, but he's not stuck over there. Hashem has because Hashem is past, present, and future, Hashem has already moved on. And this, of course, is, a healthy thing for people to do, to not be so stuck like Shmuel was stuck in that moment. He was mourning Shaul the rest of his life. That cannot be healthy. Right? Doesn't mean that you have to forget, but it also you can't be stuck over there. So that's what it means. Kilo adam hu liyinachem. So there's no contradiction here. But I would like to.
When Hashem imlich et Shaul lemelech, it's in condition. If you listen to me, if you listen to my instructions, you continue to be a melech.
Right.
The minute you change it, so you yourself are out.
right.
out of the picture.
Right. So but Shmuel was not able to accept that. But Shmuel, I'm saying, was not. Shmuel also knew that. Shmuel was aware of that. But Shmuel was somehow stuck. He was stuck in that moment. Right. He was misabel. He was ki hisabel Shmuel el Shaul. He was velo yasaf Shmuel lirot et Shaul ad yom oso. He was mourning Shaul the rest of his life. But I would like to suggest. Yeah, you want to say something?
No, so, Kadosh Baruch Hu is not like Shmuel.
Right, Hakadosh Baruch Hu is not like Shmuel. Ki lo adam hu. Ki lo adam hu liyinachem. He is different than human beings. Although he can, as it were, regret, but in that moment of regret, he's already consoled because he's already moved on because he already knows that that there is goodness there is goodness coming. Okay, but I would like to suggest another way of looking at this. And now we go back to the perek that I jumped the gun on, Perek Tes Zayin. So we read these psukim. Shmuel is going to anoint David, and pasuk vav vayhi bevoam, and they arrive vayaris Eliav, and he sees Eliav vayomer ach neged Hashem mishicho. Who exactly is the person saying this? Not exactly clear, but let's say Eliav is the one who is speaking. And he's acknowledging the presence of Shmuel in their midst. Vayomer Hashem el Shmuel, and Hashem says to Shmuel, "It's not this one. Al tabet al marehu vel gova komaso kimiastihu. I have no interest in height, in looks, in physical stature. Kilo asher yireh adam ki adam yireh la'inayim, Hashem yireh la'levav. I'm not interested in what people see. People look at people judge on cosmetics. God looks at the heart of man. So then he calls Avinadav, Lefne Shmuel, and he comes before Shmuel. Vayomer Gambazelo Bachar Hashem. This one also he did not choose. One second. Vayaver Yishai Shama Vayomer Gambazelo Bachar Hashem. Vayaver Yishai Shivas Banav Lefne Shmuel, and he marches out. Yishai marches out all seven of his children. Interesting. He marches out, Shivas Banav, his seven children. It means his seven children. It doesn't mean seven of his eight children. It's like David doesn't even exist. Vayaver Yishai Shivas Banav. He marched out his seven children before Shmuel. Vayomer Shmuel al Yishai, and Shmuel says to Yishai, Lo Bachar Hashem Ba'ela. None of these. Vayomer Shmuel al Yishai, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Shmuel says to Yishai, "Hatamu hane'arim, is that it? You don't have any more kids?" Vayomer, and he says, "Old sha'ar hakatan, I do happen to have one more. V'hine roa batzon, he's tending the sheep." Vayomer Shmuel el Yishai, "Shilcha v'kachenu." Send for him and bring him here. Kilona sovat bo. Po, we're not going to sit down and have this carbon, the meal from this meal offering, until I see him. Vayishlach, and he brings him. Vayiviyehu, I send for him and he brings him. V'hu admoni im yifei naim tov ro'i. And he's a redhead, or he has red hair, if that's what admoni means. Im yifei naim, beautiful eyes, v'tov ro'i, and pleasant to look. Vayomer Hashem kum shacheu ki zehu, and Hashem says, "This is the one." Okay, question. Before we go on any further, what exactly are the character traits of David HaMelech that are indicated in the psukim here? So, what do we know about David? Well, we know tov ro'i. Easy on the looks, yifei enayim, beautiful eyes, v'hu admoni, all physical appearances, apparently nice ones, and Hashem just told Shmuel when he brought out Eliav as a potential contender, I don't care about physical looks, so it cannot be the admoni yifei enayim and tov ro'i are relevant to the choice. So what else do we have here? All we know, as far as I can tell, is three other pieces of information. One, Hinei Roeh Batzon, he's a shepherd. Two, and apparently, the other brothers were not, because this one is, you know, they're all whatever they are, but this one is Roeh Batzon. That's unique about him, apparently. Two, Sha'ar HaKatan. He's got one left. What does the word Sha'ar mean? What does the word Sha'ar mean?
That's his only one left.
Yeah. Nishar. So I would say, like, from the word leftover, he's got one leftover. It's like not even chashuv, not even significant. Sha'ar HaKatan. He's the youngest, but I think the phraseology here is almost dismissive. Sha'ar HaKatan. You can hear Yishai, you can visualize Yishai waving his hand away. Okay? So that's the second piece of information that could be significant. He's attending the flock in the field, apparently the only one, or maybe the only one. Sha'ar HaKatan doesn't seem to be very significant. And the third piece of information is that Yishai barely considered him a son. At least as the pasuk says, Vayaver Yishai brought forth Shivas Banav, his seven sons. Not seven of his sons, his seven sons. So by the Navi describing Yishai bringing his seven sons in this phraseology would seem to indicate that somehow that David is not even considered part of the family. So we have three pieces of information here. Yeah.
He was a stepbrother. He was either illegitimate or from a wife that wasn't like his number one wife.
Okay. So we're going to take a look at that medrash. We're going to take a look at that medrash in a second. And Chazal in the Yalkut HaMechiri flesh this out. I'm going to show it to you in the original. And then apparently there are, I guess, interpretations and explications of it. Rav Zevin in his Sefer HaToda'ah has like 10 pages describing this medrash. I happen to have found an English rendition of it online, but I'll show you the medrash and then I'm going to show you the English. And I think in this medrash we have the key to understanding why David was chosen, what it is about him, and also understanding about Hashem's regretting, or what does it mean that Hashem regretted, or he doesn't regret like human beings. David, go ahead. What do you have to say?
I don't know if this has any bearing or not, but the description that you just mentioned about David seems very opposite of Yosef and his brothers, where his brothers were the prominent ones, and they were the shepherds that went out to the field, and Yosef stayed behind. Or Yosef was the favorite son, and here David is not.
I didn't think about that, but I think that there definitely is a counterpoint. I think there's a contrast. There's a contrast here. You have the brothers versus the maybe the brothers versus the rejected brother, and we'll see over here the brothers versus another rejected brother, and in both cases the rejected brother turns out to be the king. I think that's
both of them were the youngest ones. Both of them.
Both of them were the youngest ones. Yes, I think. I think that's spot on. I did not notice that beforehand, but I think that that is absolutely correct. So let's take a look. Yeah, go ahead.
David had a terrible childhood, and he mentions it in Tehillim.
Okay, good. And it is on that parak in Tehillim that some of this medrash is based. Julian, go ahead.
They were also the runt of the litter. They were not being
a cat owner. I don't get the imagery.
It also happens in dogs and all animals, and they're sort of left behind. They're sacrificed almost.
So who's the brunt of the litter? Who's the brunt of the litter? Yosef and David?
Yes.
Yeah.
Both brunts.
Right. Okay. All right. So let me go over here. One second. There we go. Okay. All right. This is, well, I'll just give you the, this is Yalkut HaMechiri. I'll say for Tehillim, Barbara. Say on, it's a collection of Midrashim on Sefer Tehillim. This is Solomon Buber, and the collector of this edition. And for those of you who are interested to know, this was published apparently in Berdichev, this version of it. Okay, so let's go here. I'm going to read you, I have to move your the screen that has your faces on it to the side so I can see it. One second. Okay. Unfortunately, I do not have the capability of highlighting on this screen, but if you can see my cursor here, it'll give you a little bit of help. All right, so we're starting here from the second line here. Pligi ba tre amorai b'marava. There were two Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael who had a dispute. Chad Amar David ben Ahuva haya. One says that David was the son of a beloved wife. V'chad Amar David ben Snua haya. And one says that David was the son of a despised wife. Ketzad, how so? Yishai Rosh L'Sanhedrin haya. He was the chief of the Sanhedrin, the Av Beis Din. V'lo haya yotze v'nichnas ela b'chlusa b'shishim ribo. He had a whole entourage with him. V'hayulo samech banim gedolim. I guess he had 60 children. What?
That's a lot.
Yeah. Uperash me ishto gimel shanim. And he separated from his wife for 3 years. Why did he separate from his wife for 3 years? We'll see in a minute. I'm going to read you the English rendition. But he separated from his wife from 3 years. La'achar gimel shanim ha'isalo shifchana v'nisavela. After 3 years of celibacy, lahavdil, like Benjamin Franklin, like Thomas Jefferson, had a shifcha, and he had desire for her. So why did he get rid of, why was he celibate from his wife, and what's going on here with the shifcha? Nevertheless, Amar la, he said to her, B.T., takni atzmech halayla kideisha tikansi elai beget shichur. I am going to free you, and you are then going to be able to be with me as husband and wife, and we will sleep together. Halcha hashifcha. So the maidservant was a loyal woman, and she spilled the beans to Yishai's wife, also known as Nitzevet. The Amra Ligvirta, and he said she said to her mistress, the mistress of the household, whose name was Nitzevet, Hatzili atzmech v'nafshi v'adoni megehenim. Save me and my master, i.e. Yishai, from hell. Amarla. So Nitzevet said to her, Matam, what are you talking about? Sachala Sakol, and the Shifcha told her everything. Amarla, so she said, B.T., my daughter, Ma'es, what am I going to do? Hayom gimel shanim lo nagabi. 3 years my husband hasn't touched me. Amarla, she said, Etein lach etza. I have a suggestion for you. Lichi, go ahead. Tkini atzmech va'af ani kach. You go and prepare yourself for intimate relations, and I will as well. Ula erev, and in the evening, kishiyomar sigriyat hadalet, when Yishai will say, shut the door, so apparently it will be dark, tikansi at ve'etze ani. You come in, and I will slip out stage right. The kacha sasa, and this is exactly what happened. So they switch places. There's so many allusions in this medrash, right? In addition to thinking about Yosef and David, of course, We're thinking about Rachel and Leah. We're thinking about Yaakov being deceived, right? We're thinking about, right? So, so what happened?
And
David and Bathsheba. Right, David and Bathsheba. Right. So what happened? La erev amda shivcha u v'kibsa es haner. The evening came. She blew out the candle. Bas liskores hadeles. She went to close the door. Esha Nitzevet comes in. She, the Shivcha, goes out. Asta imo kol halayla nisabra midavid. So they were intimate, apparently, the entire night. And she became pregnant from that night of relations. Now, umitoch ahavaso al osa Shivcha. And because of his great love for the Shivcha, Yatza David Adom mibein Echav. So he came out with this reddish either hair or complexion or whatever that from all of his brothers. Bikanam Ruchachamim Tzar Chadim L'kashet Atzmo V'lamod K'neged Ishto B'sha Shehi Ola Mibes HaTfila. So if you the Chazal here are giving suggestions on how to ensure good-looking children, make sure the husband looks at his wife when she comes from the mikvah. In any event, l'tes chadashim bikshu baneha laharga. So what happened? So let's think this through. The wife, who he hadn't been with for 3 years, and he didn't know that he had been with that night, a few months later, turns out she's pregnant. So the assumption is that this married woman was Mezana. Right, so Yishai thinks that she is unfaithful. The other sons think that their mother was, was a harlot and had infidelity. Right, such a person like this, maybe he's Chayv Misa. Where is it? L'tes Chadashim Bikshu Baneha Laharga. The children wanted to kill her. Yes, Bina David and David along with her. Kevan Shirao Shehu Adom, but when he was born and they saw that he was this reddish complexion, Amar Lahem Yishai said to the boys, Hanichulo Vihiye Lanu Mishuabad, leave him alone, but he'll be a slave to us, Viroetzon, and a shepherd. And this little tidbit of information was kept a secret ad chav ches shana for 28 years. Kevan shamar le'akadosh baruch hu l'Shmuel. Now Hashem says to Shmuel, go to Beis Yishai, bring him out, bring out the children. Eliav comes. Hashem says, I don't care about looks. Bring me all the children. He brings out his seven children. Amar losh, amar... Amar, right over here. Amar lo Shmuel Yishai hatamuna arim. Amar lo etamu. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is the one. This is the one. L'cha v'ashlachacha al Yishai v'ata omer tamo. Amar lo od nishar hakatan v'huro etzon. There's one more left. Go get him. You're going to anoint him with oil. Okay. So, that's the end of this. That's the end of this medrash. There is a nice rendition here of it in English, and again, this is based in part on the Yalkut HaMechili, as well as Rav Zevin in his Sefer HaModim, the book of our Jewish heritage, so explains as follows.
Rabbi, I can't.
What? I can't hear you. What?
I can't believe he was the head of the Sanhedrin. Disappointing.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Perhaps. I just want to get this over here. One second. All right. If I can't find it, I can't find it. All right. The issue here was, I'm sorry for, yeah, okay, here we go. To understand the hatred directed towards David, we need to investigate the inner workings behind the events, the secret episodes that aren't recorded in the prophetic books, but are in the Midrashim. David's father, Yishai, was the grandson of Boaz and Rus. After several years of marriage to his wife, Nitzavet, after having raised several children, Yishai began to entertain personal doubts about his ancestry. True, he was the leading Torah authority of his day, but his grandmother, Rus, was a convert from the nation of Moab. And during Ruth's lifetime, many individuals, the halacha had not yet been settled about Moavi velo Moavis, Ammoni velo Ammonis. The halacha is that even if an Ammonite or a Moabite or a Moabite man converts to Judaism, he may not marry a Jewish woman. Ammoni, they cannot be accepted into Kahal Yisrael. But what about a woman? If a woman converts from Moab or Ammon, so is she allowed to marry into the Jewish people? So the Psak Halacha in the Gemara, ultimately, millennia later, is Ammoni velo Ammonis, Moavi velo Moavis. This is only a male Ammoni and Moabite, but not a female Ammonite or Moabite woman. If they enter but at the time of Yishai, this was not yet settled law. And therefore, during his lifetime, many individuals were doubtful about the legitimacy of her marriage to Boaz. The Torah specifically forbids an Israelite to marry a Moabite convert, since this is the nation that cruelly refused the Jewish people passage. Boaz and the sages understood the law as per classic interpretation of Torah Shebaal Peh, as forbidding intermarriage with converted male Boabites, while exempting females. With his marriage to Rus, Boaz helped to clarify and publicize the Torah law. However, Yishai was not, it was not clear to Yishai. Boaz died the night after his marriage. Ruth had conceived and subsequently gave birth to their son Oved, and some rabble rousers at the time claimed that Boaz's death verified that the marriage to Rus was indeed forbidden. So it still wasn't 100% settled. Time would prove differently. Once Oved and later Yishai and his offspring were born, their righteous conduct and prestigious positions proved the legitimacy of their ancestry, etc. However, later in his life, doubt gripped at Yishai's heart, gnawing away at the very foundation of existence. Being the sincere individual it was, his integrity compelled him to action. And it is there, if Yishai's status was questionable, he was not permitted to remain married to his wife. Disregarding the personal sacrifice, Yishai decided the only solution would be to separate. And Yishai's children were aware of this separation. A number of years have passed. Yishai longed for a child whose ancestry would be unquestionable. His plan was to engage in relations with the Canaanite maidservant, and by freeing her, halachically, this would somehow, be a child without any question of their legitimacy. The maidservant was aware of the anguish of her mistress Nitzavet, and the story continues as we read it in the Yalkut. So the point here is that taken these midrashim all together, and if we look at it in the most in the more favorable light, Barbara, that he was that he separated not, somehow punishment to his wife, or he just was lusting after this woman, but actually there was something greater than, it looks a little bit better. But assuming this midrashim on the face of it, what emerges from here is that David HaMelech grew up in a household where he was, one, shunned, two, he understood the power of halacha, and that his situation really was a consequence, or the situation in his family, it was on some level a consequence of his father's you know, sort of scrupulous, you know, observance of the halacha. So, and David accepts it. David accepts it. He accepts his position, and he accepts the morality that was taught to him by his father in the name of Judaism, in the name of Torah Judaism. All right. Before I go on any further and bring and connect the dots for you, Julian, you have your hand raised. No? Okay. All right. I guess. No. Okay. All right. So let's pull this all together now. Why did Hashem choose David HaMelech? Well, let's go back and think for a moment. What were the problems with Shaul that we developed over the last couple of weeks? Well, number one, Shaul believed that Shaul did not accept Hashem as the determining factor of what is considered moral and not moral, right and wrong. Right? When Hashem tells him to go destroy Amalek, Shaul has his own ideas of what's right and wrong. Number one. Number two, Shaul was a man of great humility. But he was too humble. He was so humble that he was crushed by his humility. So when the people said, do this, he felt pressure and he did that. That's not the way of a king. So he accepts Dvar Hashem, the morality of Hashem. He has this trait of humility, but he's too humble. And number three, he accedes to the pressure of the masses. Now, if those were the three problems of Shaul, David HaMelech is actually a good antidote. He's the right person. How so? Because David HaMelech grows up in an environment in which, because of what his father understood Torah law was, he wasn't with his mother for many years and separated from his mother. And this is something that he accepted. He was in an environment where, because of what was understood to be Torah law, he was shunned, right? Because his mother, theoretically or potentially, was engaged in infidelity. So he was shunned, and he's not crushed by it, and he accepts it. He accepts it on its face. And so he experiences great humility, but he's also somebody who learns learns to be a person of his own identity. Because at the end of the day, you know, nobody around him is helping him. So he has to stand up on his own. So he really has all three traits and all three problems that Shaul had. He exhibits the positive side of it, the positive element. And this is why, what do we know about David in the Psukim? All we know is that he wasn't really even considered part of the family, right? He was considered not important at all.
Cinderella.
Yeah. So this is right. So that's why I titled the shiur Cinderfella. He was Lamaisa Cinderella. Lahavdil. Right? He was shunned by everyone. But he wasn't broken by it. And in fact, he grew from the experience. And we know that because how his life ultimately turned out. Now, why was it? So now, given all of that, I go back to our original question. How can you say Hashem doesn't regret? Ki nichamtim. Hashem does not regret like human beings do. Hashem, of course, regrets. He regretted the creation of the world. He regretted making Shaul into a king. But the key here is that Hashem doesn't regret. He lo yinachem like an Adam, like a person, like a human being. Which means, if you think about it, when Hashem destroyed the world, and he starts from scratch. Why did Hashem, what's the difference between the first creation of the world and the second version, you know, the world 2.0? The first version of the world, Hashem gave him everything. And when you're given everything, that's a problem. And so humanity is sort of devolves into corruption and into self-immolation. The second time around, he puts Noach out there, and Noach has to make it happen on his own. Noach's got to make it happen. And it's messy, and it's difficult, and it's harsh, but it's real. It's real. When you have to do your hishtadlus, when you have to make it happen, it's real. And that is kinichamtim. Hashem sort of regretted, you know, creating a world in which, you know, he was all there for them. And so the world 2.0 is a world in where people really have to make it happen. And that's Noach. And that's the world, the messy Noach, the messy world that Noach spawns, that Noach builds. Now the same thing over here with Shmuel, with Shaul and David. What do we know about Shaul? Not a lot. But what one thing that the Navi does tell us about Shaul is that he was nechba el akelim. He was a very, very humble person. And that would seem to be a good thing. But I would argue that the problem of Shaul's humility is that it was nature, not nurture. He was born that way. He was nechba el akelim. He was a humble, humble person. Now, when you're a humble person, just by like this, you know, by nature, not by nurture, then when faced with the challenge of having to stand up for oneself, it might be hard to do so, because one's nature is just to be humble, nechba el akelim, to be hiding amongst the bushes. David HaMelech is different. David HaMelech's humility is earned. It's learned. It comes through the hard knocks of life and experience. And that's why his humility, he's not crushed by his humility. He doesn't have to worry about, we're not concerned that he can't stand up to the, you know, to the people. He was never given their adulation to begin with. His humility is a humility which is learned and earned. And he has to figure out how to live life. It's not just that he's a humble guy and everybody says, oh, what a nice humble guy. He's a humble guy because he was shunned and spurned by his family. What David accomplishes in basically getting to the point of being Shaul is exactly that. He accomplishes arriving at the stature of Shaul. The fact that Shaul didn't have to earn it, that I would argue he was just naturally that way, that was his downfall. And that's kinichamtim. Hashem was consoled. Hashem, you know, regretted. He's ready to start from fresh. But it's not that Hashem regretted he's starting from fresh. It's not that Hashem regretted what Shaul did, or Hashem regretted what the people did in the time of the Mabul. Hashem regretted, if I could say this, maybe in himself, that he chose a Shaul that was comparable to the to Briyasa Olam 1.0, that it was just somebody who was natural to, somebody who didn't have to earn it, a world in which everything was given. And that being the case, that being the case, what?
He made a change. Who? Sometimes you need a change, completely something different than what you had before.
Right. And what I'm suggesting is that the reason that David was the right choice and the reason that David was able to be the right choice is because David had to earn those midos that Shaul had quite naturally. Nature versus nurture. And when you have to earn it and make it happen for yourself, then it can be long lasting and it can be real and authentic. What were you saying, Rabbi Shaloni?
It happened before by Yiftach. He was chased out from the house because we had Benishah, Heret Ata, and then they called him in and said, what do you want? And he started, he became a leader, and that's exactly the same.
Right, okay, right, precisely. And so therefore, this is the unlikely birth and rise of David Melech Yisrael. David really should never have been born. He should never have been born. The only reason that he was born was because of the ruse between Nitzavet and the Shifcha. Oh, and I forgot to say this one thing. There is a Medrash that says that David, people would come, they would make fun of him, but his mother was there for him. I forgot where I saw this. His mother's name was Nitzavet. Do you know what the word nitzavet means? Nitzav. Nitzav means standing strong, standing firm. David HaMelech, he is the son of nitzavet. He is at once low, the lowest of the low, shunned and spurned and shamed and everything, to make him as humble as can be. But he's the son of nitzavet, nitzav. Strong, he has a backbone, standing straight. His low station in life made him humble, didn't make him low. And his low and his mother's influence, perhaps one could suggest, his mother's influence is what gave him the strength of character. And those two things, strength of character without humility is arrogance. Humility without strength of character is just weakness. But David HaMelech had both. He had the strength of character for the son of Nitzavet, and he had the humility, a real humility, a genuine humility, which was earned by the by life experience. And together, those make for the exactly the opposite of the antidote of the problems of Shaul HaMelech.
Hannah said to Eli, "Ani ha'isha ha'nitzavet imcha bazeh," and from her Shmuel was born.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Okay, and so therefore, I think we answered our original question, two basic questions. One is, what does it mean that Hashem doesn't regret? The answer is, Hashem doesn't regret because he's immediately consoled. It's not like human beings who sometimes get stuck in that place, but he's consoled because Hashem knows what's coming down. And second of all, what was so special about David and why was David chosen? Given the dearth of what's mentioned in the Psukim, the little that we do know is now built upon by the Midrashim, and therefore I think we can give a compelling answer to why David is the proper replacement for Shaul. And with that, we'll pause for the evening.
Could I ask the question?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm a little confused with the part where it says he was Admoni, because he was the son of his mother and father, just like the rest of his brothers. So why was Admoni sticking out? Weren't any of his other brothers, maybe they were Admoni also?